Steve Brown. He's a spokesperson for Mike Madigan, Speaker of the House, joining us. You're in Southern Illinois. How long are you going to get to stay, Steve?
Well, I'll be here through Thursday, so a couple days. I came down yesterday, parts of three days.
Good, so reasonable weather while you're here.
Yeah, that's great.
That's good.
55, I think, when I got out of my car yesterday afternoon.
I really do appreciate that you reached out to give me the opportunity to sit down, because, you know, you and I talk, and sometimes we just really don't have a lot of time, and this time gives us a little chance to really just kind of chew over some stuff.
So. Sure. And I'm happy to do that. And you made the offer the one time I was on the show, and I said, well, I come down here three or four times a year for a variety of reasons. I've got one son at the university now, I think a second one next fall, so I'll probably be here more.
So what's he going to do when he grows up?
Well, the one who's here now is a history major, wants to work in the history field. The younger one wants to do the same thing. The younger one originally was going to be in the aviation program, but he's kind of gravitated towards history as well. And I was going to make one small mention before I came in this morning, Tom. I stopped and got some spray paint, put my name and Social Security number out in the parking lot to hold the space for the eclipse, and I'm ready. But I thought, we'll just camp out, bring the truck, camp out there, and it'll be okay.
You need a place? I got a place for you, my friend. I got a place for you. You don't have to worry about it for a minute,
hopefully,
okay?
It's a thing where people put several days around the actual date, and it's a big old deal.
3-day music festival they're planning now.
Sweet.
For Carbondale.
That'll be great.
To keep those people and anchor them and try to create the financial
opportunity. Well, there's people who say once you get down here, you never want to leave. And I would agree. I mean, I know guys who are still working on their bachelor's degree. I graduated in 71. We were classmates.
Right. They're still here in grad school. I think I see them out the park every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, see, while you're here, known, of course, for being a spokesperson for the Speaker of the House,
right.
But you're also, in your own right, speaking with, two journalism
classes? Two journalism classes, right, and we're going to a basketball game tonight. Now, hopefully we can avenge. I live in the Peoria area, as you know, and we lost, SIU lost to Bradley at Carver Arena at the beginning of the Missouri Valley season. So hopefully we can avenge that loss tonight. I think the team's playing better than it did in Peoria.
Well, we had that issue with two players that were, out for a day, too.
Right.
Or 3 days,
and they played again, so I don't know the details, but apparently got resolved.
Administrative oversight, I think, was the technical term in the release from Tommy Bell, so they were back at it, and nobody really told us what it was, but I think a lot of people are happy to be back.
Yeah.
You know, the fact you mentioned you're from Peoria, it's weird how perspective affects every decision.
All right,
so I'm reading about Caterpillar saying we're moving our headquarters to Chicago, 300 jobs and 300 good-paying jobs.
Right.
All right, so you live there. My response is at least the jobs are staying in the state of Illinois. And your response is?
Well, that's a good thing, but it's very unsettling. And the company, I think, attempted to keep a lid on the announcement. I don't think anybody knew until it broke on one of the with Dan DiIorio and Greg Batten, who have a show similar to yours, not as legendary as yours, on the morning radio. Rachel Potts, the CAT spokesperson, came on, explained there's still going to be 12,000 jobs, but it's very unsettling. I mean, I read some stories in a local paper this morning comparing it to when ADM made a similar announcement.
Right.
They're leaving their workforce in Decatur, but the execs are going to Chicago. There's all kinds of talk about why and who and what. I always thought there was pretty terrific airline connections from Peoria. You can go directly to Dallas, directly to Chicago. I think to Detroit, Minneapolis, and Atlanta now. And I thought that was all kind of inspired by CAT, worldwide presence. And what it'll mean, though, is these 300 families are all probably people in nice homes with kids in the schools, and they're going to be uprooted. So I live over in Washington, Illinois, which is just across the river. Most of my neighbors are tied into CAT in one way or another. I assume most of them will still stay in the area because they're like mid-level people. But I don't know what it does to our housing market.
Right.
I'm not planning to sell anytime soon, but I don't know if you were thinking you're going to downsize soon.
But here's the thing. Courtesy of an economics teacher from SIU, 300 jobs, the associated income multiplied by 7,
right,
the economic impact factor. And, boy, you start to say 300, and then, Heron faced the same thing when Maytag left, right? You live, but does your quality of life change? Heron did a lot to keep itself and morale up.
Sure.
You've got two hits there. You got a financial one, you got a psychological one.
Well, and there was a whole plan on the books to build a new world headquarters in downtown Peoria. The company noted the building they had was kind of outdated, wasn't worth rehabbing, and that was going to be, they have a block of property that they were going to build on, and that all went away. So that'll be uncertain in terms of what could happen. But I think there's a pretty strong base there. In addition to Kett, you've got two big hospitals that seem to be expanding, you know, every week. Bradley University. You got some other things going on. And they will leave the hourly worker, the manufacturer people, and all of their research and planning. A lot of that stuff is there for their whole worldwide
operation. A lot of the heavy lifting, yeah.
So we'll see. The people around Decatur had lived through the ADM thing. They said, you know, it was shocking at first, but they're getting through it. Things are okay.
Interesting story. 2 weeks ago yesterday, I was in my doctor's office and just kind of coming around after some medical procedures, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. had a couple of moments to talk, and I really wasn't talking much at the time. And the right. doctor, you know, I had to ask him a couple of questions, and he says, I want to tell you a story. He says, today, whenever I'm done with you, I'm going to another doctor's office. He's selling his equipment. He wants me to see if there's some of the staff I can take on from his staff. He's leaving the state. The state's not paying its bills. They owe him $253,000. He's done. He's pulling out of the state. He's closing down his office. Not a story that you're unfamiliar with.
No. And something that I think everybody I know is hoping we can turn around as quickly as possible. But it's been a very protracted struggle, fight, disagreement, what have you. And it's hard to tell. I think it's one of those things you're going to know you had a solution when you look at your rearview mirror and you see the solution behind you. I think it's going to come up, happen quickly, get resolved, but it has had a bit of a bad impact. I mean,
I literally was talking with a friend. I said, you know, if there was one person in the world I wanted to be right now, it would be Solomon. Something Solomon-esque, right. to bring people together, to drive them together, to create that resolution. Because the math, when you see Comptroller Mendoza saying unpaid bills by July, $15 billion, will pay $700 million in interest. The right. math should be a motivating factor, I think, among other
because
things.
Because that money you paid in interest could be used for your schools, for your roads, for health care services, what have you, or, you know, not used, given back to Herb and Ethel, you know, down the block.
Right. I mean, here we are. We're talking about, look what we could do with $700 million, or not do, as the case may right. be, and release the burden. While the Senate's idea is increase the corporate tax, increase the personal income tax, last I'd heard, to 5.25%, that had gone up from 4.95, 4.99, and then the last I heard last week was 5.25.
Yeah, the numbers are shifting, the plan is evolving, and I've deferred on behalf of the Speaker to comment on specifics because those are changing.
And because it's the Senate.
Well, and the Senate has opted to try and work a fashion of plan amongst themselves, a bipartisan plan. I think that should get them some respect and some time to sit and watch and let it evolve. And I think that's good. We've tried working amongst all the leaders and the governor. That's not worked so well in any kind of long-term plan. We've limped along with a few things. And so that's evolving. But I would only say, offer one bit of advice. If we're going to do a plan, it's going to probably require a tax increase. I really don't see a way to avoid it. There was a group yesterday. It was kind of a hard conservative, Koch brother kind of group.
Illinois Policy Institute.
Yeah. And they said, we can do it without a tax increase. Well, it's pretty devastating, the numbers. We'd have to have a whole show to go into that. But if we're going to do it, Tom, I suggest we do it so we got enough money to do what has to be done. Let's not say, and then find out
but because that's kind of what's going on in the past. We'll do a little bit about pensions. It's like
the tax increase in 11, okay? They did it as a temporary tax, and they did a piece of it. Part of the tax rate that's still in place was supposed to be designed to pay back bonds that are going to be sold to pay off the bills. Now, unfortunately, we didn't have Republican cooperation on the 3/5 needed for the debt, and so the bonds didn't get sold. The bills weren't paid off. Had that happened in 11, we would have had a much more manageable number of unpaid bills. Probably, people say day in, day out, $3 billion in unpaid bills is kind of the normal. It's not a bad thing. It's just the cash flow. So we didn't, and then we had temporary. So my view is people are not going to like you politically because you voted for higher taxes, all right? They're not going to like you less because you voted for a temporary higher tax. They're either going to be against you or not. And you got to make, if you're going to be for the tax, you got to tell the story. You got to explain what you're doing.
Almost sounded like Solomon.
Well, I don't know about that.
Think about that.
I think it's common sense.
But when I heard it, all right, I get that. They're going to hate you either way, temporary or full-time. And, yes, they are.
Right. But some may sit there and listen and buy the explanation, and so that it may be not be universal, but it will be no less between temporary and permanent.
The people of Illinois, I think, Steve, have gotten to the point where they're watching this and they say, okay, we have resigned ourselves to certain facts. Mm-hmm. Increased taxes, this has to be paid. We can't keep going on. All right, we get at this new pension tab around $130 billion. So they say, look, all right, we'll give you that. I'll give you that tax increase. What's in it for me?
Sure.
And that is the thing that I don't see anywhere. Property tax that they say is a permanent, which is not, two-year. Still can be increased with a vote. I get that. That's one of the governors. But what's in it for the voter, the taxpayer, the resident?
Well, hopefully at least the elimination of the uncertainty that we've seen so far, the various services that people say they want, have asked for, people have voted to put on the books, the uncertainty that goes on at SIU. I saw a research paper that was done, Tom, a little while back, relatively current, says on average every year, Illinois loses about 5,000 high school grads going outside the state.
The brain drain.
The statistics, tell you once you leave, most of you don't come back. And we there's all this migration debate that goes on. I would think there's a microscopic place we could start. Let's make sure that as many of these good, smart high school kids who are being lured by other states with tuition deals or scholarship deals, let's try to keep every one of them here.
Now, see, now this is, Steve, this is interesting. What's in it for the voter, the taxpayer, the resident, having a state that's not underwater?
Right.
That's what's in it for us.
And competent delivery of services that the voters have said, we'd like a quality health care. We'd like quality mental health. We want a court system that works. All the things that are happening out there that government spends money on.
We want roads without holes in them.
Yeah.
On the list goes.
Sure.
Which, of course, I spoke with the governor last week. He wants a capital plan very badly.
Right. And he's right. And if you drive around the state, as I tend to do, and he tends to do a lot because the governor, ended the executive air fleet, so he's driving a lot of places. He covers a lot of miles. He's got to see roads a lot better than even you and I.
Mike Madigan, really, they came out against him. When it came to that speaker vote this year, I think a lot of people were watching that. Boy, the Republicans came out swinging on that in the election process for speaker, didn't they?
Well, they made him into the number one target as if everything that's happened in the state over the last couple of decades is his fault. And I like to point out that, well, the things you criticize all have public act numbers on it, which is what happens when a piece of legislation becomes a law. It gets signed into law by somebody. It had to have been voted on in the Senate. So the speaker will take his share of blame, credit, responsibility, what word you want to use, for our problems. But it's certainly a larger collaboration that's got us to where we are today.
Tom Miller, rule number 4 for life. To have a really good screw-up, you need everybody's cooperation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I found that's a good, hard rule. That's why I moved it up to number 4.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
Number 3 of the Tom Miller rules for living is everybody does everything for 2 reasons. The good reason and the real reason. Is the real reason Illinois doesn't have a budget is because some of our upper leaders' personalities clash?
I don't think it's personalities. I think it's belief.
Philosophies?
Philosophy. Okay. I would call it more philosophy. Personalities, if you get around politics and government, for the most part, you find most of these people are not close social friends. You know, they're not going to have, Bruce Rauner's not coming over to Mike Madigan's backyard for a Sunday barbecue, okay? It's just not the way it is. Everybody has their group of associates, allies, friends, family, what have you. Not a lot of intermingling goes on. But the things, for example, the governor's asked Mike Madigan, Democrats in the legislature to do, is sort of turn your back on a lot of different things that have been at the core of the Democratic Party for many, many years, decades upon decades. And because the governor believes this is the path path to prosperity.
Reform. Reform.
Well,
is
he
the
calls
path
it reform.
Prosperity.
I think that's a word that is about as abused as driving your old Edsel around.
Yeah, reform and transparency are thoroughly abused words, aren't they?
Transparency always says phony to me. I don't know about you.
I'm going to be transparent. So before you were lying to me then?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the way. Let me be honest with you.
Yeah.
Well, what
right.
were you up until
so,
now?
Yes. But is there are. So take workers' compensation, for example. The governor wants to do more. It'll essentially limit. An injured worker's ability to get good health care, it'll cut the benefits they receive. Well, the benefits are 55% of the benefits are based on wages, okay? And people make more in Illinois than, say, they do Indiana or Missouri, and that's why that cost is there. Now, so if you want to cut their wages, regardless of whether they're injured or not, or then you're making the quality of life in the state worse. So there was one of the local newly elected legislators who's on your air this morning, I think in the news story, talking about right to work in other states and how this is going to be a problem. And I'm thinking, well, sir, you ought to begin explaining that in Illinois, you could get a decent job. You could do a day's work for a day's pay and provide for your family. I'm not sure that's always the case in some of these border states. And the border states are nice places. You know, I'm a native of Missouri and blah, blah, blah. So I'm not trying to demean that. I'm just saying I think we got better stuff going on in Illinois.
All right, and I get that, too.
Yeah.
When you look at the income and the fact that we're a donor state, it speaks to the state. The most highways of any state in the union, most nuclear power of any state, we're bigger than Kentucky. Let's just go ahead and say it.
Right.
And so that math from that strong differential allows us to draw wrong conclusions.
Sometimes it does, or they figure people can find out they get to do something cheaper. Well, they do something cheaper because the husband and wife work in that facility aren't making the kind of money they're going to make. They can't provide for their kids. They can't do the things they want to do. I'd rather work to make Illinois a better place than tear down or race to the bottom and get us to where our median income is the same, say, as Indiana's, which is about a $10,000 difference right now, by and large. And so, to me, that's not prosperity. That's not making things better.
What's going to happen next week? Do you think everybody will just kind of wait and see what the Senate does? Is that what we're doing, starting the 7th, 8th, or whatever?
Yeah, I have a rule about not doing predictions. It's a Steve Brown rule, number one.
Right, and that's a good rule, too, by the way.
It is, because normally I'm wrong, even if I have my gut feeling. So I think that we're going to watch the Senate try to make progress, see where we are. Hopefully, they'll pull something together. It's a very complicated set of ideas that you didn't throw in all the gaming that's there. Now, by the way, I believe the
Walker's Bluff.
Walker's Bluff could be in that mix, which would be an exciting development. You know, I mean, people scratch their heads and say, what is this all about? And I said, well, I've met the lady who owns the property, and Emily Burke, I think
Cindy Bunch, right? And Emily Burke's working the PR
working
for
on
her.
The project.
Right.
And it makes as much sense, frankly, in the first round of riverboats, there was one in Galena. Okay, which is a little bit out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, it's kind of you go west to Rockford,
and
right?
Metropolis,
before,
you know.
Yeah, well, they have Metropolis. Right? Now, the guys in Metropolis might not like a casino Walker's Bluff,
right.
But they've survived through thick and thin down there. So maybe it'll be okay. I just don't know. We'll see how it happens.
Well, you won't find another Southern Illinois community whose alleys are paved.
Right.
Been there.
Yeah, I get it.
Right?
I know.
So have you.
Yes, sir.
You know Mike Madigan for a long time.
Yes.
I was speaking with Brandon Phelps recently about the attempt to vilify him. I'm taking words out of his mouth here, but he says, look, Mike Madigan's been betrayed as a monster. He's not a monster. That was Representative Phelps.
Right.
All right. Now, and you have to realize Representative Phelps, one of the few Democrats in these races in November, held on to his seat.
Sure.
You know, closer than I'm sure he would have liked.
Right.
You know, John Bradley, you know, losing the state rep seat. You've got Gary Forby losing the Senate seat. Phelps saying, no, look, Madigan's not. I mean, what happened this last November when it comes to downstate, the reaction from the speaker? I mean, how do you define it, I think, is what I'm
well,
looking for,
Well, I'll
Steve.
Define it. The way I look at it is twofold. They made an unprecedented run trying to make Mike Madigan the boogeyman of everybody. In reality, though, I think the impact of Donald Trump on the election turnout, probably the real factor in what happened. Because they ran this anti-Madigan stuff in about 14 or 15 legislative districts all over the state, okay? They ran it against Susana Mendoza for comptroller. They used it a little bit in the effort to defeat Tammy Duckworth, okay? So the Republicans lost the Senate seat, lost the comptroller's office. We're successful in a couple of legislative races, but the legislative races were also where Donald Trump was getting 70% of the vote. So they can take some credit if they wish. I don't think it was a good use of their money. And then they've kept up this drumbeat, the Republicans, who were funded by the governor, to say the same kinds of things. And I don't understand how they expect a compromise to be developed if you're out doing the same notion that you got to fire Mike Madigan, dump Mike Madigan, all of that kind of stuff. I don't think it's productive in their campaigns, if you really want to assess it. And I don't think it's going to be productive in terms of working through the state's issues. Time will tell.
Because we are all social animals, and we do kind of not like being called names and pushed in front of a train. And so that predisposes you to being less cooperative, less communicative, and maybe just in generally more surly. And that, when I'm not saying that necessarily about the speaker, but both sides, we're human beings. Mm-hmm. If somebody goes on TV in your region and goes, he's a terrible, horrible person, and you don't want your children next to him, how can you not be?
You'd be a little concerned.
Put back on your heels, yeah, right?
Right. And I don't know that that Mike Madigan pays close attention to these things. I think his family, people like me maybe, who make our livelihood monitoring all this stuff, probably get a little more fired up. I get a little more fired up in explaining things to people. And usually when we talk it through, they come back and say, well, you're right. He other people had to have been involved for us to get to where we got. And there's things that he's done, like block tax increases, when Jim Thompson wanted more income tax increases, that people forget, you know, because they don't live and breathe this stuff 24/7.
Right, and sometimes we do forget our history, and that's why I found it interesting that your sons are interested in history, because it tells us so much.
It is.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Before I let you go,
let's talk for one minute.
I know you do a lot of work to help other people in the area. And this, called The Daily Egyptian, the First Century, I find really a fascinating piece of work.
A student-produced book to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Daily Egyptian. Like all newspapers in America, it is shrunk in terms of its physical presence, but it's also online. The book's $20. The funds will go to pay for scholarship programs and things like that at the School of Journalism. Let me throw a phone number on everybody.
Sure.
618, they knew that, 536-3361. It is the history of the university and the development of the region through the eyes of student reporters and editors at that paper, both the work that's there and the work that was compiled. And it's an exciting thing.
I just opened just a page randomly.
Okay.
And what did I get? An 8x10 picture of Old Main burning in 1969 and student demonstrations.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating tale of how the university developed over the 100 years the paper's been around.
Right. I remember, I got some of my friends who are now mayors in downstate Illinois who were some of these National Guardsmen who were in the street once upon a time.
I was a student. I was a student when that all happened.
Right. So, interesting. Yeah. Color and black and white. Good stuff, by the way. The Daily Egyptian of the First Century. Steve, it's always good to see you, man.
Tom, thank you.
When you get back, let's get together again.
We'll be
here. I think we're going to have new subject matter, or at least we bloody well hope so, right?
Yeah, it'd be fine by me. I like to talk about new things. I'll be back in spring.